up, I found out as I got into this, it's going to take me 2 weeks as I put this together, the messes that I want to talk about. I've been a little, like I said, under the weather, and so you're not going to have any visuals today to go along. I wasn't feeling that well, and I went down. So basically, I went to work this week or did my work, but then when I did my regular job, I just didn't have all of the energy to put into other things. So my wife would say I laid around a lot on a Thursday night, Friday night. And so you're going to get no visuals. You got to listen really close is what I'm trying to say, and listen really good. But what I want to talk about is this idea of when is it right to disobey man because you are obeying God? At what point or where is that line drawn? What is that line of demarcation? I work for a telecommunications company, and when I very first started working with them, and I only did this for a month or so, but I did troubleshooting calls on the phone where people would call in. And one of the things that I always had to say to every customer that called in was this. If they were having problems with their phone, I would say, okay, have you tried this, the X, Y, Z, gave them a list of things to try. And I said, I can send a technician out if you want. But here's the deal. If he comes out and the problem is in your wiring, in your phone, in your house, then it was a $65 charge just to come out, and then whatever it was on top of that. And so I'd have to tell him, however, if the problem was on our side, then there would be no charge to you if the phone problems are. So do you want me to send a technician or not? And people would have to think through it, or sometimes they would hang up and they would say, you know what, let me go try a few more things before I have you send the technician. I'll call back. Other times they'd say, just now send the technician. They were ready to spend the money, whether it was their fault or not. And so basically, at the house, there's a place called the DMARC. And the DMARC is that spot where the phone company's line comes in and connects to your house. And at that point, everything coming up to your house is the phone company's responsibility. Everything past that DMARC is your responsibility. It's what you have to pay for if there's a problem. There is what we call a line or a place of demarcation. So when it comes to the commands of men, the Bible tells us that we ought to obey our rulers. We ought to obey those that are over us. That's the normal modus operandi. Christians are not to be rebels. Christians are not to be, by our nature, defiant. We are supposed to respect authority. See, we teach that from kids. Respect the authority of their parents, of their teachers, of their policemen. And you and I, we are to respect our authority, and as much as is possible, we are supposed to live under that authority and obey that authority. But there are times in which authorities conflict. And so how do you decide which authority to obey when there's a conflict? So if you're a kid, you have a teacher that tells you one thing and a parent that tells you another. Which one do you listen to? Which one is the proper authority? Government tells you one thing, but God tells you another. What do you do? And when do you say, okay, in this situation, I can't obey man because God has told me that. So what I'm going to do in the next 2 weeks, I want to take that subject and look at it and just draw some conclusions. Because of the amount of material I have, the conclusion drawing is next week. Just to let you know, or the final, what we're going to do this week is we're going to look at this, set up the modern situation a little bit and how things are right now. And then we're going to go through and give you some biblical examples and one extra biblical example of when people had to follow God and disobey man. And so this week, let's start off. We're going to set up the situation as we find it. You know, we've been living in a time in which, for example, in our city, we continually have this mask mandate. It's a mandate that personally I've been a little frustrated with, that personally I disagree with, and most of you know that. However, at least when stuff like this started, when people didn't have the information we have now, I can understand some of the positions or some of the fears that people had. Now, I'm going to address this next week, but now that more information has come out and more things have come out, it's becoming clear that what was supposed to be a two-week thing to flatten the curve has become a months-long thing to do a lot of other nefarious stuff. And so, again, I'm going to address that, those particulars next week. But it does at least get us into this arena of when do you finally say, you know, enough is enough. I've got to obey God and not man. And we're living in a time in which, at least in our country, you've got the situation of it not only being a biblical question, but it's also becoming a constitutional question. And so you have those two in line. So let's kind of set up the situation. So I want to begin with what's going on, for example, in California. In California, you got Governor Gavin Newsom. Newsom has put on some of the most onerous restrictions on people gathering because of COVID-19. There was a period of time in which he closed the beaches. Of all the places that need to be closed, beaches are probably not the places that need to be. I mean, people are usually pretty well spread out there. You're out in the open, plenty of open air, salt water, everything. I mean, I always thought that is ridiculous to just close a lot of those beaches. Now, at the beginning, when you didn't know enough about it, a Florida beach where people were wall-to-wall bodies, maybe. But then as we learned more, even that. But Governor Newsom has been one of the most onerous governors when it comes to this. And so he has restrictions that he's placed, and they have been pretty strict restrictions on the churches. And for a while, the churches really didn't say a whole lot. I was actually surprised. I thought more churches would have bucked the governor sooner than they have. But they finally, the bucking bronco woke up. You know, the strap got tight enough, and he started kicking, if you know what I mean. And so they are doing that now. So let me give you a few things that are going on, for example, in California. Many of you are familiar with John MacArthur. He has the radio program, Grace to You. His church is the Grace Community Church. In the city of Los Angeles, or in the area that he has told his church that they cannot meet in person. And so they said, no, wait a minute. You're causing us to violate not only the First Amendment of the Constitution, but our biblical mandate to be together, to gather together, to assemble ourselves together. So, you know, we have been, quote, nice in trying to follow some of these public guidelines for a while just to be safe. However, you guys are allowing people to protest in groups way larger than our church. And you're not stopping them or putting any restrictions on them, but you're doing that to the churches, and that's not right. And so they were, if you want to say, the city kind of started putting some fines on them and said, hey, we're going to fine you. And then they finally said to MacArthur, hey, we're even going to put you in jail for up to 6 months for doing this. So let me read a little bit about what's going on there. And let's just say, Grace Community Church pastor John MacArthur fired back a response to California officials threatening him with jail time for holding in-person services in his church. He said, bring it on. MacArthur appeared on Fox News with host Laura Ingraham to discuss his ongoing battle with Los Angeles County officials. The pastor has rebelled against coronavirus-related health directives and wrangled in court with the county since July. Now, they use the word rebelled there, and I'm thinking the author of this article was using the word rebelled there trying to paint MacArthur in a negative light. I would say he's taking a stand and probably wouldn't totally use the word rebel, but that's just me. To read on, he says, we received a letter, this is MacArthur speaking, I say, we received a letter with a threat that we could be fined or I could go to jail for a maximum of 6 months, MacArthur told Ingram. Of course, my biblical hero, apart from the Lord Jesus Christ, is the Apostle Paul. And when he went into town, he didn't ask what the hotel was like, he asked what the jail was like, because he knew that's where he was going to spend his time. So I don't mind being a little apostolic if they want to tuck me in a jail. He said, I'm open for a jail ministry. I've done a lot of other ministries and haven't had the opportunity to do that one. So bring it on. He never had a jail ministry, but he said, hey, it's time that we take a stand. There are a few other churches in California that took a stand. Harvest Rock Church in Pasadena, Calvary Chapel, River of Life Church. All of these churches at least said, you know what, we're going to start meeting and we're going to buck the system, so to speak. They said, you know, enough is enough. This line of demarcation, we're going to cross it. We've got to obey God rather than man. So that's California. Let me just keep going. Because again, in California, one of the biggest problems is they had no problem with allowing the rioters, the looters, in huge numbers to meet. And they didn't stop them. They didn't disperse them. But they said, hey, you churches, you can't meet. You can't have more than 10 people in a gathering. And so that was the problem. The title of my message, to start off, was Stay in Your Circle. And here's why I titled that. Because of what happened in a city called Moscow. But this is not Moscow, Russia. This is Moscow, Idaho. Middle America, flyover country. Moscow, Idaho, on Tuesday, September 22nd, the city council extended the mandatory masking order set to expire on October the 6th until January. So in Moscow, Idaho, they said, hey, you got to wear a mask and we're going to keep this order in place until January. Despite the fact that there have been no deaths or even hospitalizations due to COVID-19 virus in Latah County, which is where Moscow exists. No deaths, no hospitalizations, but buddy, you're going to wear a mask. And so a lot of Christians said, hey, wait a minute. That's not right. And not only not wear a mask, but, you know, you got a social distance everywhere you go and keep the 6 feet apart. And so they decided to, quote, protest. And so they went down to City Hall and they had a, we'll just call it a sing-along. And so they got 100 people, 150 people, I don't know how many it was exactly. I saw the video, and had I had time, I would have shown you the video, because the video with the audio is great. Because it's the audio of them singing Amazing Grace, and at the same time, they're arresting 3 people there. But what was interesting was, is the city council there had gotten wind of the fact that they were going to have this, quote, sing-along or protest there in Moscow. And so what they did was, is outside the City Hall, they painted circles on the ground 6 feet apart with the idea that you had to be in your circle, and if you weren't, you were closer than 6 feet apart, so you would be violating the 6-foot rule. I thought only dads had that, the 6-foot rule, you know, and you were supposed to stay in your circle. So I thought, you know, I'm going to title this message, Stay in Your Circle or Else. You got to stay in your circle, man. That's what the city council said. You got to stay in that circle. You can't get outside that circle. You can't get closer to one another. Even though we've had no deaths, we've had no hospitalizations, nobody's really sick around here, but you know what? You're going to wear a mask and you're going to stay in your circle. When is the line? When you got to say, I'm going to, that's just too much. Central Baptist Church in D.C. They're suing the mayor because the mayor says that you can't have meetings of more than 10 people. And they even said you can't even have church service outdoors. But at the same time that they said you cannot have outdoor services, which is what Central Baptist Church in D.C. wanted to do, they did allow rioters, protesters, or whatever else, meet outdoors with as many people as they wanted, wherever they wanted. And they said, hey, the church said, this isn't right. I mean, at least if you're going to have restrictions, it's got to apply to everybody. You can't selectively place it on the church and not on any other group. And so they sued the mayor. The Department of Justice even got in on this one and said, you know, we're going to side with Central Baptist Church there in D.C. So the Department of Justice filed a statement of interest in the case contending the Constitution. Remember I said this is both constitutional and biblical. Contending the Constitution and federal law require the District of Columbia to allow the church to hold services outdoors. Now, the Department of Justice is not saying, hey, wait a minute, you can hold them wherever you want them, maybe. They're saying at least you can hold them outdoors in the same way D.C. allows other types of outdoor First Amendment activities. The U.S. government argues in a brief that, quote, while a local government has significant discretion to decide what measures to adapt to meet a public health threat, the free exercise clause of the Constitution requires that whatever level of restriction it adopts, government must treat religious gatherings the same as comparable to non-religious gatherings. The statement of interest, again, was filed at Capitol Hill Baptist Church versus Bowser. That's the name of the mayor there. I love that. Mayor Bowser. I thought Bowser was a Nintendo. Remember, he's the bad guy in Nintendo, the creature that you fight. Anyway, I just love it. Sorry. That we'll strike that from the recording there. but that's what's going on in Washington, D.C. Virginia, my home state, I hate to say it at times because I really like Virginia, but they've got one of the worst governors in the country, Governor Ralph Northam. Now, Governor Newsom of California and Governor Cuomo of New York may be running neck and neck for the dumbest governors in the country. But Northam is head and shoulders above everybody else as the most nefarious, corrupt, and wicked governor in the country. This is the governor that said, hey, if a baby is trying to be aborted and then it's born alive and it's sitting there crying on the table and you leave it till it dies. He's the governor that's for infanticide. So he's one of the most wicked men that's out there. And he had some of the most onerous restrictions put on churches in Virginia. Basically, you couldn't have gatherings of more than 10 people. Even if you had a gathering of 10 people, you had to stay 6 feet apart. You had to have signs on your seating. You had to have signs in your bathroom, signs on your door. You had to have signs of any food that you gave the people, of those 10 people that came. You had to disinfect everything. You had to wear a mask. I mean, they were just super duper onerous that they put on the churches. And so several of the churches finally filed suit against the governor. Well, the interesting thing was the governor realized he'd overstepped his bounds. So quietly, without telling anybody, without saying it publicly, he removed some of the restrictions. Now, there in Virginia, these executive orders, they're called EO-whatever the executive order is. So there's EO-63 and there's EO-67. So 67 and 63, one of them is really, really onerous, and the other one is just so-so onerous. So quietly, because of the lawsuits, he got rid of the really, really, really onerous stuff. But he kept the other ones in place. The point is that all across America, we are seeing this kind of stuff going on. I was going to read more about Northam stuff, but we won't worry about that. I want to skip down here and just read one thing about it. One of the pastors in Virginia said this. He says, we as a church can come together and decide if we want to restrict ourselves, but the government cannot step in to do it for us. He's just saying it's not the government's right to tell the church how to meet and how to worship. If somebody wants to worship and they want to worship less than 6 feet apart, they ought to be able to worship less than 6 feet apart. He went on to say, because corporate worship is central to Christian life, it is extraordinary for churches to forego meeting for even a single Sunday, the pastor wrote. Now, I will say this. The pastor said that it's extraordinary to even miss for a single Sunday. They said that after they quit meeting for at least 8 Sundays. I said, you know, you guys should have spoke up a little bit sooner, but that's all right. You're getting on the bandwagon and you're doing it. And so then the pastors went on to say, thus, with each passing week that corporate worship is banned, as churches stand ready to implement reasonable public health precautions, the government pushes Christians closer to the point where they must choose to sin against God and conscience or violate the law. He's saying what it is you guys, you're just pushing us further and further to where we're finally going to have to take a stand. He says, we're getting to the point. You know, we've been accommodating so far, thinking, okay, 2 weeks to flatten the curve or a month or so. But this is dragged on. This is 6 months now. We can't keep doing this. At some point, something's got to give. And so he says, we're going to have to take a stand. He said, ultimately, as Christians, we are compelled to obey God's law. Corporate worship is commanded by Scripture. It has been the foundational element of Christian life for nearly 2,000 years. Alternatives such as live stream services and drive-through worship are not adequate substitutes to the body of Christ united together in corporate worship. He said, hey, we got to come together. People need each other. They don't need Facebook. All right? Facebook is sometimes a nice thing. You can communicate with people you haven't seen in a long time. You can say stuff to them. But you know what? People need personal interaction. They've got to come together. This is not disrespected to Christians. New York City, the Jewish congregations are facing persecution also from Cuomo and de Blasio, and more so from de Blasio. On Wednesday, 3 Orthodox Jewish congregations in Rockland County, New York, sued Governor Cuomo for issuing a blatantly anti-Semitic coronavirus order restricting religious service in Jewish areas just before 3 sequential Jewish holy days. Cuomo falsely blamed the Orthodox Jewish community for a surge in COVID-19 cases in New York, referring to the surge as a predominantly ultra-Orthodox cluster. And he admitted, quote, and the lockdowns were based on fear rather than science. He says, people see you Jews gathering together and they're scared. Pharaoh saw all those Jews that he had in slaves. And he says, man, they're having babies out the wazoo. And they got so many of them. Man, I'm scared. I'm not letting you get out of here. I'm going to keep you right here, right? So that's what's happening right here. According to the lawsuit, Cuomo's October 6th executive order is blatantly anti-Semitic, creating religious observance-based color-coded hotspot zones directed towards particular Jewish community. The order not only flagrantly flies in the face of scientific evidence and the SOOS injunction, that's their emergency order type injunction, that's their phrase for it, which was a legal injunction preventing New York from subjecting religious services and stuff. Well, the SOOS is where you can't go against religious people there. But it says, it also specifically singles out the Orthodox Jewish community in what has proven to be the latest extension of Governor Cuomo's streak of anti-Semitic discrimination. And so these guys here basically saying, hey, you guys are singling us out as a group, us Jewish people. You're not doing this with the people that are protesting. You're letting larger groups come together and protest, riot in New York, cause all the problems that we're having in New York. But you don't say anything about that. But you're stopping Jewish congregations from coming together. We could go on and with this, but let me just say this. Cuomo said this. He said, I have to say to the Orthodox community tomorrow, not to everybody, just the Orthodox community, see, he's singling them out. If you are not willing to live with these rules, then I'm going to close the synagogue. I'm going to say to the Orthodox community tomorrow, if you don't agree, then we'll have to close down your religious institutions, meaning your schools and everything else that you have. If the religious leaders do not agree to abide by these rules, then we will close the religious institutions, period. He's saying, hey, my way or the highway, dudes, we're going to close you down. Now, if they'll do that to a Jewish congregation, what will they do to a church? difference? If he says, hey, I'm going to close you down, then he'll close the church down too. He did go on to say, he said, this is not highly nuanced or a sophisticated response. He says, this is a fear-driven response. This is not policy being written by a scalpel. This is policy being cut by a hatchet. It's just very blunt. What he's trying to say was this. He says, look, I'm scared. People are scared. And you guys meet together in groups to scare us. Because you don't wear a mask or you don't follow the rules when we think you should. You're scaring us. You know what? I'm just going to stop you from eating. Can I just tell you right now, the world is totally scared of Christianity and Christians and religious stuff. And it's based on fear. I mean, they really are afraid of us. I wanted to say that. That is that. They're afraid of us. They are scared. And so they said, hey. He says, hey, the reason I'm shutting you down, it's not the science, it's the fear. It's fear factor. He went on to say, it's not the best way to do it, but it is fear, a fear-driven response. That's his words. The virus scares people. Hopefully we get the numbers down in the zip codes. The anxiety comes down, and then we can have a smarter, more tailored approach, the governor added. He said, yeah, maybe someday we'll let you worship when we think it's okay and when we're not afraid of it anymore. Hopefully we can get it under control in a few weeks. People take a deep breath. Then we can live it, have a more intelligent, sophisticated policy. Oh my, yeah, we know intelligence of it. Well, never mind. He just, but then, you know, this has been going on for a while. I'll just give you one more illustration. Then we gotta get to the biblical stuff, right? When I say we're gonna do that. This may be 3 weeks now, who knows? Jack Phillips. Y'all know him, maybe you remember him. Jack Phillips, the government of Colorado, spent 7 years persecuting Jack Phillips. Jack Phillips is a baker and makes really nice decorative cakes. He's artistic in it. And so he was asked by a gay couple to make a cake for them, and he refused. He said, it just goes against my religious, you know, beliefs to use my artistic abilities for something like that. He said, I'll sell you anything. I'll sell you cake. I'll sell you cookies. I'll sell you donuts. I'll sell you bread. I'll sell you anything to bake me, but I'm not going to artistically make something that goes against my religious beliefs. So I am not going to make a cake that represents gay marriage because I'm a Christian. It goes against my beliefs. So for 7 years, he was sued in the state of Colorado. And he was pursued by the state of Colorado. And he was pursued by their commission on, I don't know if they really call this, but on equal rights and everything else, because he violated somebody's rights by not making a cake for them with the design that they wanted. That's not like they couldn't have gone to any other baker or somebody else who would have done it. But they picked him out specifically because they wanted this lawsuit. Because they wanted to do this, and their goal was either to make him bow down or to put him out of business. That's really what they wanted. And so it was 7 years long. So let me read just a couple of things about that. So they decided to destroy Jack Phillips and his masterpiece cake shop after the baker refused, like I said, to design a specialty cake for David Mullins and Charlie Craig's gay wedding. This was in 2012. Remember, it took 7 years before he finally won this case. And notice that this crusade against him was before, quote, gay marriage was even legalized in Colorado or recognized by federal courts, which it has been since then. After years of fiscal and personal struggles, Phillips was finally vindicated by a 2018 Supreme Court decision that found the Colorado Civil Rights Commissioners had displayed, and I quote, a clear and impermissible hostility towards sincere religious beliefs in their efforts to punish him for thought crimes, which was a gracious way of pointing out that some unhinged members of the commission had likened Phillips to a Nazi and a segregationist simply because he wouldn't let two bullies in the government of Colorado coerce him into designing a cake. So that's what really happened to Jack Phillips. But then again, the court ruling, though widely celebrated by those of us on the right, only partially dealt Americans. So here's what happened. That commission on civil rights that went after Jack Phillips, in their communications with one another, and in their communications towards Jack Phillips, it was very obvious that they were biased and against him. They said very disparaging things about him, to him, and everything. So what the Supreme Court said was, look, your bias is obvious. You shouldn't have been biased against him, and so we're going to rule in his favor. But what they did is they left the door open, meaning that what if there was a commission who hid their bias, never expressed their bias, but still went against somebody like Jack Phillips? They left the door open. So since they left the door open, guess what they did? They came back after Jack Phillips again. After the Supreme Court had exonerated him and actually found in his favor. So even with this victory, Phillips was soon back in court, this time defending his decision to not make a special transition theme cake in 2017. A transgendered activist named Autumn Scardina, who had allegedly asked Phillips to make an image of Satan smoking marijuana, the Church of Satan, and a three-tiered white cake with a large figure of Satan. And I'm not even going to tell you what the next thing they asked to be on the cake is, because it's not suitable for church. Just note that if I can't say it, you know it's pretty bad. And that's what they wanted on their cake. They lodged the complaint. Instead of going, now, think about this. They knew Jack Phillips' stance. They knew what was going on. But you know what they did? They didn't go to some other baker who might have done it for them. They specifically targeted him because Jack Phillips has to bow down to what they say. And so they said, hey, we're going to go after him. And so the activists went after Jack. And they purposely, this person purposely went in there. Now, here's the deal. Well, let me read it. It's a little bit easier. Instead of going through that whole cycle again, Colorado dismissed the majority of the charges. Because they said, hey, we lost last time, right? So we're going to dismiss it. But rather than appealing the commission's dismissal, Scardino filed a lawsuit seeking $100,000 in damages, fines, and attorney fees, and a district court heard the arguments. So here's what they did. They didn't follow the rules. Said, all right, the commission ruled against us. Now we appeal to the next level up. They said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to just let that go by. Then they actually let it sit past the period of time of comment in which they could appeal that decision. They said, you know what? We're not even going to go through the same route before. So now what we're going to do is, you know, last time we lost in this arena, so we're just going to fight in another arena. So now we're going to go to district court. And we're going to take the same case to district court. And we're going to go fight it there. And so that's what they did. So for the sin of being one of the first Americans to stand up to this new cultural imperialism, Phillips will likely be hassled to the grave. But if you think these battles aren't worth fighting, or you think the trajectory of the issue is impossible to alter, Phillips have proven critics wrongs. And not merely because their stands may induce courts to uphold the right of religious liberty against the mob, but because minds can be changed. And then this article goes on and says, hey, you can maybe change people's mind. But again, like I said, the win wasn't enough. The Colorado agency that went after Phillips over the same-sex wedding cake, then suing for that gender transition thing. So they went after him. Again, I can keep going on this, but they keep going after the same guy. These illustrations, I could have given you 100 more. Remember I said I had tons and tons of material on this. Could go on almost ad infinitum. The point I'm trying to make here is we must understand what is coming. With the continued onslaught of transgenderism, LGBTQ plus whatever letters you want to add to it laws, marriage redefinition, child rearing practices, it's not a matter of if, but when we must face and be confronted by man says versus God says. When do you cross the line? The mask mandate, which I'm going to mention next week, it's important. But I think in the long run, it's probably periphery and small compared to the battles we are going to fight in the coming decade and the things that you're going to have to take a stand for. The mask mandate, I think, will be symbolic of a much bigger divide and a much bigger line of demarcation. So that's setting it up, and we're out of time. All right? So this may be a 3-week message, but let's at least turn to one of the passages that we were going to look at. I had you turning to Daniel and also had you turning to Acts, but let's just go to Acts and let's go to chapter 5. And we will just end this way. And then next week, I'm going to give you the biblical history. I'm going to give you 4 things from the Bible and 1 extra biblical one from the Apocrypha, actually. I've never used a thing from the Apocrypha, but I'm even going to do that next week. But in Acts chapter 5, and let's just begin reading. Let's start in verse 17. Then the high priest rose up, and all they that were with him, which is the sect of the Sadducees, and were filled with indignation. And they laid their hands on the apostles and put them in the common prison. Now, why did they put them in prison? For preaching the gospel. For preaching that Jesus had died and risen again. For preaching that the Jewish leaders had condemned him to death unwrongly. Wrongly. They condemned him to death wrongly. And that Jesus then was crucified. And that Jesus rose again. And so they put him in prison for this. Now, note, they'd already done it back in chapter 4. They'd already talked to him and said, hey, don't preach in his name. And they didn't do a whole lot to him then. They just said, don't preach in his name. And then the apostles went out and started doing it again. We're going to look at that next week. Here in chapter 5, they do it again. They get thrown in jail, but look at verse 19. The angel of the Lord by night opened the prison doors and brought them forth and said, go, stand and speak to the temple, in the temple, to the people, all the words of this life. So God does a jailbreak. Isn't that cool? Mm-hmm. Here's God, and he does a jailbreak, and he gets these guys out of jail, and then he tells them, go and speak. Now, I'm going to tell you what, if God breaks me out of jail and tells me to do something, I'm probably going to do it. I just kind of think I would. So, verse 21. And when they heard that, they entered the temple early in the morning and they taught. I don't know if I do it early in the morning, but. I'm just kidding. But the high priest came, and they that were with him, and called the council together, and all the senate of the children of Israel, and sent to the prison to have them brought. But when the officers came and found them not in the prison, they returned and told, saying, the prison truly found we shut with all safety, and the keepers standing without before the doors, but when we opened, we found no man within. That's like a Mission Impossible jailbreak. They got out. Nobody even knew they got out. They had masks back then. Those Mission Impossible masks that looked like other people. I don't know what they did. But they got out of there. Nobody knew it. Verse 25, then came one of them and told them, saying, behold, the men whom you put into prison, they're standing in the temple. Oh, man, they pulled a David Copperfield here. Called the Prestige. And you have 2 people in one place. They pulled a Prestige on them, man. They weren't supposed to be in a prison, and they're sitting there, they're preaching in the temple. Verse 26, then went the captain with the officers and brought them without violence, for they feared the people. All right, so they arrested them again, but they said, hey, we're not going to beat you up when we arrest you. We're not going to rough you up. As the people were listening to them. And when they brought them, they set them before the council, and the high priest asked them, saying, did we not straitly command you that you should not teach in this name? And behold, you have filled Jerusalem with your doctrine and intend to bring this man's blood upon us. So their complaint was, number one, we told you not to preach this, and you did. Complaint number two was, you're going to make the people think that we're murderers because you're teaching them that we're the ones that put Jesus to death. Well, you were. But be that as it may, they weren't trying to get those guys in trouble. They were just trying to say, hey, this is Jesus raised from the dead, and you can be saved if you turn and trust him. Right? But that's what they're trying to get. That's the message they're getting out. These guys said, hey, we told you not to preach in this name. And verse 29, then Peter and the other apostles answered and said, and here's our text, we ought to what? Obey God rather than men. Peter said, look, guys, you told us not to preach in his name. But God, who just broke me out of jail and got me preach this message. He said, when it comes to a choice between obeying God and man, the choice is I'm going to obey God. You can't shut us up. I just want to say for too long, we've been shut up. We've been standing in our circle. Got your circle, stay in it, the world says. You got your mask, put it on. And I'll talk about the mask next week. Like I said, it's not as big of an issue as the circle. Not as big of an issue as don't preach in Jesus' name. Not a big issue as LGBT stuff. It's not a big issue as transgender stuff and all that kind of thing, all right? And we'll get to those. I said next week it might be 2 weeks now or 3 weeks. I don't know when I'll get to it now. But the point is, there comes a point that you've got to make a stand. It's not if it's going to happen now. It's when is it going to happen. And so we better prepare ourselves and say, you know what? It's a whole lot easier to take a stand when you prepare to take a stand. See, if you know the enemy's coming and you can put up a bulwark and you can put up sandbags and you can put up protections and you can get yourself steeled and ready, that's a whole lot better than just having to do it all of a sudden if it hits you, right? It's coming. So start building the defenses now. Start recognizing that, hey, you've got to steel yourself. You've got to strengthen yourself. You've got to gird yourself. You've got to put on that armor of God, and you've got to get ready because there is coming a time, it's not if, but when, you're going to have to take a stand on traditional marriage. You're going to have to take a stand on male versus female. You're going to have to take a stand on preaching the gospel or keeping your mouth shut. They're all coming. We've seen glimpses of it. Peter said, we ought to obey God.